Behind the Wheel
with Peter Hitchener and Chris Miller.
Driven by behindthewheel.com.au.
When do we go for a ride?
There it is. It's another week of Car Talk. And look, we've got to go back to last weekend because all I've heard about all week is Harry and Meghan.
Yep.
And the wedding.
The wedding.
And every, the car they drove away in. The,
oh, well, all I've heard about is people who vowed and declared, I'm not watching that. No, I will not be watching that. They all did.
It's funny how all these people who said, no, not doing it, knew about the really long speech in the middle.
It's exactly
and
right.
Which everyone knew the Queen was wearing lime.
Yes, that's right. Everyone's been chatting about that, but they didn't see a minute of it.
No.
Oh, no, no.
Well, in our neck of the woods, the team split up. The girls went to one house and they had their lemon and elderflower baked scone cupcake things.
Yep.
And they all had tiaras and got all dolled up.
Well, they needed those tiaras. They must have cost them $1.20 each because they're beautiful.
That was about that,
top quality plastic, and you have to wear them.
Well, we sent the girls that way, and the boys all went the other way.
And what did you watch?
Well, we watched...
You didn't watch the footy, I can tell you that, because it was a shocker of a game, and I'm a St Kilda supporter, and I can vouch for it.
Well, we watched a bit of the footy, and then
then you watched the wedding.
Back, and then
it's on
all
the wedding.
Kept turning it over, going, oh, what's going on now? What's going on now? Yep. Anyway, it was worth watching, not because of the dress, which I'm sure is very nice and all the rest of it, and the guests were great. But the cars.
Yeah.
How good were they?
Wonderful. What that motorcade. A motorcade that starts with horses, grey horses, and a coach that's emblazoned with gold and trimmings and things. A motorcade and then followed up with Jaguars and Land Rovers and things. Can't be all bad, can
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. There were really some beautiful motor vehicles displayed. Of course, Range Rovers took centre stage, but there was Discoveries in there. There was XJ Jaguars.
Yep.
There was, of course, a couple of big, very large Bentleys.
Yes, that's right. The Queen was in a Bentley that was handmade for Her Majesty. I remember we ran a story about it at the time.
Yep.
A bespoke
You'd
car.
You'd never buy one that looked like that, would you?
Well, I think if you want to make a statement, it probably doesn't do a bad job of it. Because especially as there's a sort of a sunroofy thing so that there's more light coming in on the people in the back who are sort of waving, not sort of over-enthusiastically, but waving every now and again at the people. So, I think it's made a statement.
Yes, it did indeed. But I think the biggest statement was made by Harry and Meghan getting into that ice blue E-type Jaguar with the chrome spoke wheels. It just looked magnificent.
Well, it did, and yet I didn't get it. I thought, wait, what are you actually driving? And it was only later I discovered, this is a car that's been worked over. It's an old model, of course, an E-type that hasn't been around for a couple of hundred years.
Yeah.
And it's been electrified. How about that?
And you may even be able to buy one just like it yourself.
Yeah,
we're
going to
find out the details. Yeah. Our old mate, James Scrimshaw, of course, from Jaguar Cars Australia, he's got the inside running on what I think they're calling, I think it's Project Zero, E-Type Zero, something like that. Anyway, he'll tell us what the official name is. And talking of Jags, just because we're in the royal mood, you're going to take us around the block in the all-new Jaguar E-Pace.
The E-Pace, which I was enormously impressed with. The best thing about it is, yes, it's a Jag, and it's got all the Jag style that you'd expect, but it's in a manageable size package because it's a small, although it looks more like a mid-size SUV.
Yep.
And nice to drive, and it's cheap. Well, relatively cheap for a Jag.
Jaguar.
Starts at under 50 grand. Not
under
bad.
50? Under 50? Normally, Jaguar badge, you immediately think 150 plus.
That's exactly what you'd be thinking. Not with this. And actually, it's a pretty good car. I must say I liked it.
Excellent. Well, looking forward to going for that ride. Also looking forward to hearing about something announced today, performance upgrades for a car that already has oodles of performance, the Volkswagen Golf GTI.
Mm-hmm.
Paul from Voxy is going to ring in a little later, give us those details and let us know when we can buy one.
What about the Peugeot, the 5008? Any word?
I'm going to take you for a crack around the block. In fact, I think you should come with me. I want you to see the interior in particular, and I want to try and establish whether it's an SUV or a people mover.
Oh.
I don't know. I can't tell.
It looks pretty stylish from the outside.
Oh, stylish. But I don't. But you know, it's French. The old Honda Odyssey was stylish too, but that was a people mover.
That's right, it was
too. So what makes an SUV? Because it used to be four-wheel drive.
Yes.
But now most SUVs you can buy come in either two or four-wheel drive.
Yes, that's true.
So why are they SUVs and not people movers if they can fit seven people in them?
I think you're always asking these awkward questions.
Nobody questions, has the answer to.
Questions that would provide the answer to life if we could only come up with the answer to them.
Joel Helms is a man who's always got the answers, and he's going to give us some on the updated version of the Nissan Navara. Simon's been driving the Toyota Corolla.
Yep.
Rachel, I don't know what she wants to talk. It's just, I can't figure it out. We'll try and make sense of it. She'll come late in the show. Some interesting stuff there. But of course, we've got to keep moving now because as I mentioned at the top of the show, it's time to talk Volkswagen Golf GTI. Okay, time to talk one of our favourite cars of all time. Been high on the list since the 70s.
It has.
Kind of just sort of, you know, probably took a bit of a back seat, you know, early to mid-90s and then came back with a roar and has been basically calling the shots in the hot hatch department ever since. It's about to assert its authority one more time. Of course, we talk of the Volkswagen Golf GTI, and to tell us a bit more about a new upgraded version. It's been announced today. It is the man from Volkswagen Australia, Paul Pottinger. Welcome back to Behind the Wheel, Paul. How are you?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to talk to you, Paul. Tell us about the background of this this new release.
Well, of course, we'd always promised this year that we would bring a performance edition 2 along to the market. In recent generations, there's been a delineation between, if one could call it, a standard GTI and a performance GTI.
Mm-hmm.
So a number of circumstances have combined to enable us to make all GTIs performance GTIs. So the corollary of that is, in fact, that every GTI henceforth will be standard with the performance tune of the engine, the performance transmission, the performance front differential lock, the bigger brakes, and all the aspects which have so distinguished performance additions previously. We were able to do that because production is being rationalised in Europe and the car is enter its last full year in production. It has been by far the most successful hot hatch in history. But we're going to have only the one variant, and it's the very best variant, and it's absolutely the variant our customers say that they want.
Now, is this exclusive to Australia only, or is this a worldwide idea?
Well, all Golf are moving up to 180 kilowatts and 370 Nm, which is an output upgrade.
That's magnificent.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been feasible a few years ago, would it? I mean, you would have winced at the thought.
Yeah.
That punch power going through the front, the fact that it deals with it so adeptly, though, is something of a testament to the engineering. But we actually had our performance-grade cars here. The performance editions were Australia-only, much like at the other end of the scale, the GTI original was Australia-only. And a few years ago, the very well-received Golf GTI 40 is. So the Australian version of the GTI is probably the most bespoke in the world.
Right.
It will certainly be the best equipped.
Fantastic. Now, I know we have a huge appetite for GTIs, a bit like for M cars from BMW or AMGs from Mercedes. What sort of percentage would GTIs account for out of, you know, every Golf you sell?
Well, the GTI, we think of it more broadly now as a performance range because Australia is also the third biggest Golf R market in the world.
Oh,
and that's in numerical terms. Not
really?
Even proportionally. So,
terrific.
That's incredible.
Mm.
And this is behind countries with three times the population.
Yeah.
This is our appetite for this car. So we see them rather more holistically, the Golf performance range, and they're 25% of Golf volume.
Is that so? Gosh, wow. That's good, isn't it?
And that would compare to, say, what, about 10% in the States or the UK?
Well, I imagine it's something like that, yes. But again, I think someone remarked, again, talking about the other end of the scale, Golf original GTI. Visiting UK journalist asked what we had on sale for. We said 38K drive away. And he said, in the UK, this car would be 55.
Wow.
Mm.
So we pack them with value.
Yes, yeah. So it's very, very sharply priced. How much?
Well, I can't give you that yet because we're just nailing down the last bit to the standard kit, but it will be right in the sweet spot of GTI pricing.
Mm-hmm.
I dare say if I can be a little tantalising, even better equipped than is probably imagined, it's going to have all the bits standard that people particularly like at the moment. I can't say any more about it than that.
Gotcha. Yep.
Having my button snipped off.
Yes, I understand. But look, we appreciate that little bit of an insight there. I would imagine that, as always, GTIs are really popular and kind of hard to get your hands on. Do you expect to see waiting lists sort of shoot up again with this sort of performance on offer?
We've got it under control at the moment. I remember back in the dim dark days when I myself as a civilian owned a Mark V Golf GTI, there was a 12-month waiting list for that.
Yeah, I know.
A decade or so ago. Our allocations increased year on year, and as I say, and even Mark 7 / Mark 7.5 has been the most successful iteration to date. We're on top of it at the moment. But I can only imagine, because everything is included in this package, and that there will be very little to option, that demand will once again threaten to exceed supply, but we'll be doing our utmost to ensure that's not the case.
Excellent. So when should we pack the sleeping bag and camp outside our local Volkswagen dealer? When can we order one of these?
Well, it's the 20th, what is it today? The 22nd of May. You gentlemen can call me on the 1st of June and I'll place an order for you. It will be here in October.
Fantastic.
Well
love
done.
It.
Well said.
Before we let you go, Paul, sadly we are running out of time, but just a quick touch base on the Polo. We were still smitten with how brilliant the base model was, the little 70-kilowatt one. How are things going, kind of tracking as you would hope for Polo?
Better than we hoped, actually, but because we launched just prior to getting full supply. The full supply is about to dock in a major port near you soon, and we'll be actually able to answer demand for that car. I think it's actually been pound for pound the best received car we've launched in the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, pound for pound it is by far and above, head and shoulders above the rest in anything in this segment.
Yes, it is.
If you need a light car, Volkswagen Polo is the one to go for. We're out of time, Paul. Great to talk to you. We'll chat to you again soon, man. Thanks heaps.
Look forward to it.
One of the smartest and most versatile products in the Altrex Auto Accessories range is Skin's Invisible Protection Film. Apply to your car's headlights or paintwork to protect from stone chips and road debris damage without affecting aerodynamic efficiency or the look of your car. You can use the ultra-thin and strong film on items around your house, such as windows, furniture and white goods. Order a roll now at altrex.com.au or pick some up at your local auto accessory retailer. Skin's Invisible Protection Film. The clear choice in paintwork and headlight protection, and a whole lot more.
Behind the Wheel.
On the road. Accelerated by behindthewheel.com.au.
Yep, still lots to get through on this week's show, including a crack around the block in the Peugeot 5008, which is the biggest of their SUVs or people movers. I'm still not sure which it is.
How many do you get in it again?
Seven.
Oh, seven. Okay, yeah. Good.
But I don't know. I just can't quite tell. Anyway, we'll figure that out a little later in the show.
Does anyone have to sit on the roof? Or
No. There's none of that. No, nor in the boot. Everyone has a seatbelt and, ice effects points the whole bit. Yeah. Rachel Franco, she's back to, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out this text message as to what she's going to talk about. I'll try and decipher that as the show goes on. But right now, of course, you'd have to have gone to Mars. I think even if you were on Mars last weekend, you still would have known about a wedding that happened in England.
You'd have been still talking about the guest speaker at the wedding, or should I say the sermon at the wedding. Some loved it, some hated it.
Yeah. You know what? The only thing I was interested in the whole time was
cars. I know what it was. It was the cars.
And did you see them? Just there in all their glory. And it's just like, oh,
and does
wow
anyone do a procession, a motorcade, really better than the royal family?
No,
I don't think so.
Nobody. And not with the sophistication and style, but yet subtlety and restraint with which they do it.
Yes, whether it's a horse-drawn carriage with gold all over the place or a nice, large, luxury Range Rover, it's going to look the part.
I loved all the Range Rovers. I loved the way they were all that beautiful navy blue. They're all very kind of, sort of regal. And there were a few discoveries in there with some, I assume, some security detail.
You'd think so, yeah.
Absolutely. But, of course, the showstopper was at the end of the wedding. We need to get detail on this, and the only person to give it to us is the man from Jaguar Cars Australia, old mate of behind the wheel, James Scrimshaw. G'day, James. How are you going?
G'day, gentlemen. How are you? I'm very well here.
So was that you sitting beside Bex and Victoria? I'm sure it was your face I spotted from that long shot.
No, I didn't quite make it. I didn't quite get the invite to this one. It would have been lovely to be there. But I didn't quite make it. It was a great wedding, though.
No, wasn't it just? And
so, the car.
Yeah,
tell
absolutely
us about that car.
I can. As we call it, the most beautiful electric car in the world, as we've always said. The E-Type was the most beautiful car in the world, and this we called it the E-Type Zero, And it's based on a 1968 Series 1.5 Jaguar E-Type Roadster. But what we've done is put a cutting-edge electric powertrain in it, which will give it 0 to 100 in 5.5 seconds, believe it or not. It is incredible.
And that would, I suppose, be the reason why, as Harry and Meghan drove off after, you know, emerging from the ceremony, jumped into the E-Type, and as they drove off, I'm like, where's the exhaust pipes? There's no exhaust pipes. What's going on?
It just took off.
In fact, if you notice, they took off in a split second after they got in. They pretty much sat in and the car drove off.
Nailed it.
So it's quite an incredible car. What they've done is replace the original E-Type engine and put a 220-kilowatt lithium-ion battery pack in the same dimensions as the engine, right where the engine was. So they haven't had to change anything on the car. It still has a prop shaft. It still has everything. The front weight distribution is exactly the same.
So it's the same weight.
Just showing you can future-proof classic cars like this. It's amazing.
And what about the underpinnings? You said that there's still the shaft and all that stuff, but is it sort of updated in any way? More modern brakes and handling and things? Or?
Absolutely. So they have. They've updated this one. They've tried to restore it and keep it original, but because what they've tried to do is to try to keep the weight the same. In fact, it's about 46 kilos lighter than an E-Type of the same.
Even with all those batteries?
Yeah. So what they've done, it's the XK66 six-cylinder engine has been removed, and they put this battery pack in exactly the same spot. And right behind that, they have an electric motor and what we call a reduction gear. And that then goes, that's where the gearbox would be. That goes into a prop shaft, which goes into the final drive differential. So we haven't had to replace everything in the car. We've replaced what we needed to keep these sort of cars alive in the future.
And it's about the only example of a retro-style car that I can think of that I actually love. Because oftentimes when people go back to the past to bring back a new, you know, it just
probably
doesn't work.
They
should have stayed there, but this one's different. Now, what happens if I'm cashed up, if I live that long, and think...
There is Powerball for Thursday.
Well, if Powerball comes through, and I think, look, I'm going to have one of those, you see if I don't. Can I, or is that just a one-off?
No, it is something that Jaguar Land Rover Special Vehicle Operations are doing. We have a division now called Classic Works that are doing things like this. They're restoring vehicles, so they'll restore it as it was, as a 1968 original, or they can bring them up to date with a powertrain like this. So this is something we are now starting to do and introduce and show what the talented people back at Classic Works can do. It's amazing how they can do this. So it shows that there's a real life in classic cars, and you know, we don't have to give up on them yet.
And is there any chance that the new panels will be made to represent the cars so that, you know, the factory will be turning out new versions of these older vehicles?
Yeah, we can. It's a little bit difficult actually getting them on the road and registering them in this day and age. If they're, you know, considering the way they're built, we would have to change the way a car's built for actually road legal and crash testing. And, you know, it's a safety for day and age. It's a nice romantic idea in there. And they're terrific. You can drive these cars on the racetrack. You know, if we created a brand new D-Type, for example, you could drive that on the racetrack. Very hard to register it and get it on the road.
I see.
With today's authority.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, a dose of reality there, but it's a lovely notion, isn't it?
It is. But it's very exciting, and there's a lot more coming on this, and I think you'll see in the future, in the next couple of years, we've got a few more of these special cars up
there, please. Excellent. Well, look, I mean, there's already a lot of very special cars in the Jaguar fleet, and one that I believe is going to be launched shortly, one that I saw ex-Formula One driver Rubens Barrichello belting around a track in Brazil over the weekend, the soon-to-arrive Jaguar I-Pace, another electric vehicle from Jag.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're doing is we're launching it very soon in Australia. We'll have that car on sale from October this year.
Can't wait.
And the first media drive is coming up in the next couple of weeks. So just in advance of that, we're now getting the first few production cars out there, and there's a whole race series that's supporting the Formula E electric car race series around the world, and there'll be around 20 Jaguar I-Paces there, or what we call the E-Trophy. Different competitive teams, Bobby Rahal, et cetera, have already got a team. There's a lot more coming on.
and that's going to be a brand new development that'll be supporting every Formula E race around the world. So expect to see a lot more Jaguar I-Pace in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, if anyone hasn't seen it, just tune into one of the Foxtel motorsport channels or anything like that. Formula E is played all the time, and you'll get a good look at what I think you'll see an awful lot of on our roads sort of come Christmas time. And a car that we're already seeing was only launched a couple of months ago, I suppose, the baby SUV from Jaguar, the E-Pace.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Jaguar E-Pace was launched. We launched at beginning of April, so late March, early April, and fantastic. It's a brand new SUV. It has the dynamics of a Jaguar, so it's really not another vanilla SUV. It is definitely has a Jaguar DNA in this vehicle, and I'm sure that when you drive it, you'll appreciate that. But it is definitely one of those cars that you need to drive. It's a bit of a TARDIS. You know, it looks like it's a small, compact vehicle, but when you get inside, it's incredible, and it feels like you're driving an S-Type.
It is a fabulous car. I've just had it for a week, and I loved it.
Well, you're about to take us for a drive around the block. I just want to kind of, I suppose, get James prepped. Have you ever been in one that has driven on only two wheels before, James?
No. I'm always willing to...
No, James.
Well, I'd suggest you strap in, because
I treated the car with respect, but I must say I loved it. The first thing, apart from the good looks of it, and that fabulous, handsome face and the body, the beautiful Ian Callum design, is the leaping Jaguar on the steering wheel in front of you. It's, you think, oh, right, this is a Jag. It keeps reminding you of it. Then you drive it and you know, yep, this is a Jag, all right. It's terrific.
Yeah, and it's really been modelled off the Jaguar F-Type. So Ian Callum, who's one of the greatest designers we believe and we're lucky to have Ian, has behind the F-Type, and he put a lot of F-Type design and inspiration into this. From when you sit behind the steering wheel and you look around, you feel like you're in an F-Type, if you don't look in the rearview mirror, that is. But looking forward, it is, and just the way it handles too, that we've tried to put a lot of dynamics into it, give it a rear drive bias, and I'm sure that you'll feel that, Peter, when you take it for a run.
Excellent. Oh, yes. Well, I reckon we do it now. James, look, we're going to let you go because we don't want to scare you senseless, and we want to make sure that you do lend us cars again in the future, so you're probably better off not witnessing this.
Hey.
But in the meantime, James Scrimshaw from Jag, always great to talk to you, mate. Thanks heaps.
Likewise. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
Thanks, James.
Enjoy, Peter.
Cheers.
All right, we're going into the garage.
Yep.
I think I'll let you take this. All right, I'm just going to stand back.
Okay, take a look at it. It's a compact SUV, but actually looks a bit bigger than that. It looks almost like a mid-size vehicle. And it's one I could certainly live with. I've been driving the diesel-powered Jaguar E-Pace, and I've really enjoyed my week with it. Now, of course, we all know Jaguar sports cars and luxury sedans. They're legendary, but the market has shifted very much towards SUVs. Even from the top-end manufacturers, you'd have seen, no doubt, the Rolls-Royce ultra-luxury off-road model recently in the media. Well, Jaguar's added a new model to further cater to this trend, the smaller E-Pace joining the F-Pace in the Big Cats lineup. Now, I suppose it's about the size of an Audi Q3 or a BMW X1 or the GLA Mercedes, but I mentioned that it looks bigger. It seems to be wider and taller than many of its competitors. Check out the stylish sports wheels. Don't scratch them. Oh, no. Even if you accidentally do find yourself off-road. I can't imagine many buyers actually testing the E-Pace off-road, but with its Land Rover Jaguar heritage and the all-wheel drive setup, probably would handle it with ease, I reckon. Now, thanks to Ian Callum, Jaguar's legendary designer, the car looks amazing. The proportions seem just right from any angle. It starts with that handsome face all the way back along its elegant flanks to the neatly proportioned back end. Now, added to that, there's the... And added to the good looks, the car's pretty good to drive. Feels sporty, maybe not quite as exhilarating as the stunning F-Type. Well, it's from the same stable, but you wouldn't expect that. It is pretty good, though. After all, it's nearly 2 tons, not the lightest car on the road, and it's an SUV with the higher centre of gravity. So it's nominally an off-roader, so don't expect sports car performance, but, it's pretty good. Now, the one I'm driving, it's a diesel, the D240 all-wheel drive. Reaches 100 kilometres an hour at 7.4 seconds. Feels nippy, though.
The fuel consumption is claimed to be 6.2 litres per 100 kilometres. All right then. I was up around 8, maybe 8 plus, no doubt as a result of how I've been driving. Not the engine itself, the cabin. Oh, right, now check it out, the cabin. It's a mix of beautiful stitched upholstery, clean lines everywhere, a few bits of cheap plastic though. I love the steering wheel. The AV system, very functional. The phone connects almost before you're in the vehicle. No Apple CarPlay, though, which is a pest. It's a pity. The blind spot assist, that's what they call it. It works really well. It helps you stay in your lane, of course, as well as warning of cars in blind spots. It works effortlessly. And really, the head-up display, always welcome. I really like them. Not surprising, it's also spacious inside. Cabin overall, airy and comfortable. So what's not to like about the prominent leaping big cat on the steering wheel? Just to remind you, yes, it's definitely a Jaguar and one that's adapted to modern lifestyles. Oh, and I've kept the best bit to last, the price. The range starts at under $50,000 for a Jaguar. It tops out around $85,000, but with all this and the price, Jaguar's E-Pace bound to find many new homes. I like it.
The ideal family vehicle has 7 seats, is spacious, practical, luxurious, and realistically priced. The new Havel H9 ticks all those boxes. The 2018 Havel H9 has just landed in Australian dealerships and boasts a turbocharged 180-kilowatt engine, 8-speed auto transmission, and more of the luxuries car buyers have come to expect from Havel. With 7 seats, great off-road ability, and a 5-year warranty, this is the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au.
The key to success is to properly promote your business. Altrex Auto Accessories have a simple and cost-effective way of getting your message to thousands of people every day. Promotional number plate protectors. Altrex Auto Accessories promotional number plate protectors could be screen printed with your business or dealership name, logo, phone number, whatever you require. To find out more about this affordable and effective marketing idea, visit altrex.com.au or call 02-9905-5055.
Behind the wheel.
Behind the wheel. Where motoring starts.
Yeah, we're going to hit the road shortly in... look, I don't know whether it's a multi-van people mover or whether it's an SUV. It's got a lot of numbers in its name.
Yes.
5008 comes from our mates at Peugeot. I'm going to take you around the block in it shortly. In fact, you should come for a ride too, Pete, because I think you'll be impressed with the interior of this thing, if nothing else.
I seem to have heard you saying about how nice the interior is. Can't wait to have a look at it.
Indeed. Lots of things to like about it. Lots of things to like about Simon Lai too.
Yeah,
obviously only in very small doses, which is why we only let him on the show for sort of 4 minutes at a time.
Oh, Simon Lai goes okay. Now, what's he up to today? What's he up to this week? Because he's gone from being an international man of mystery to a family man who drives great cars and gives us really good reviews. So
indeed.
What's he up to?
Whilst wearing brown cardigans and corduroys.
Oh, well, it's not that bad, I don't think.
He's driving a Corolla this week, so
we'll
hear about that.
Yep.
And Rachel Franco back from her road trip. I think she wants to talk roadkill. I don't know. Some weird cryptic message. I don't get it. Anyway, we'll find out a bit later. Right now, though, we've got to find out what a recently updated car is like. And this car has received a lot of attention because it now comes in two guises. The one everyone would be most familiar with would be the one where it wears a Nissan badge and it's called a Navara.
Yes.
And the person who's been driving said vehicle is the one and only Joel Helms. Hello, Joel.
Hello, guys. How are we?
Greetings, well. Joel. Hope you're well.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
First up, of course, we all know the Navara is actually what the all-new Mercedes-Benz dual-cab ute is based on.
That's exactly right.
And
I can talk at length about the Nissan Navara, but I'm yet to drive a Mercedes-Benz X-Class. So
okay.
I'm flying blind on that one, but from what I hear, they've done a lot of work underneath to make it quite different to the Navara.
It would
be nice to drive one back-to-back.
Did they need to make the Navara a lot different? Because from what I remember, when I first drove it, when the NP300 came out, it was a pretty competent vehicle.
Yeah, it is. It's different to every other dual cab ute on the market because it has those coil springs in the rear as opposed to leaf springs. Leaf springs being, around since Adam was a boy, mm-hmm. fantastic for lumping a load around, but not so good for passenger comfort. The Navara, previously very good for passenger comfort, but not so good for lumping a load around. Mm-hmm. They've gone back to the drawing board and stiffened up and fixed and modified that rear end. And a lot better now if you're hooking up a trailer or putting a hefty weight in the back.
Mm.
But what about if you're sitting in it?
The Ride is the most SUV, of all the different dual cabs that I've driven almost all of them, yeah. It is the most SUV-like on the road to drive, the Navara. It is very, very well mannered.
Right.
That's good.
Okay.
That's good indeed.
Range of engines, I believe, still available?
So it's not really a range of engines.
Okay.
There's,
two?
Basically. It's yeah, four, okay. Well, really, it's the same engine anyway. 2.3-litre turbo diesel. There's a single turbocharger one. It's got 120 kilowatts, 403 newton metres. You'll find that on the lower spec versions of the Navara. For most of the regular sort of mum and dad buyers, they're going to go for the upper spec models, and they've got the twin turbo, 140 kilowatt, 450 newton metre output. And that's about middle of the pack. It's nothing to write home about in terms of output, and certainly well behind things like the V6 Amarok and the Ford Ranger now with extra power and, of course, that turbo four-cylinder that's coming to that as well. But, about middle of the pack.
What about the cabin? How comfortable is it, given how often families get to spend time in these vehicles?
Well, I mean, I always take the opportunity, Peter, to talk about the theory of the dual cab ute is very, very sound. I mean, if you look at it unemotionally, you think to yourself, now that's a vehicle that can do everything from go off-road to tow a boat to take a load to the tip to drag the kids around. But the reality is none of these, from the cheapest to the most expensive, are really that practical. They're not really that versatile. They don't really carry very much in the back.
No.
They don't really have a lot of room inside.
They're bloody enormous on the outside too. Try parking one in a standard shopping centre car park.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. The theory is sound, but the execution, and this is across every brand and every different type, is not so great. And if you're weighing up an SUV or a dual cab, I'd always go for the SUV personally, and that comes from a lot of experience driving both.
Yes, well, there's no leg room in the back of them almost universally. There's not a lot
really
back there.
Upright back
that
seat
upright
as well,
back seat, and where do you put things? Well, there's nowhere. But
wooden steering, kind of, yeah, very agricultural. Yeah. I can't quite wrap my head around their appeal. I know some of them look pretty tough, and the Navara's not a bad looking vehicle
either.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, look, and it is a good-looking vehicle. It doesn't have wooden steering, actually. It's a very, very refined offering. The Navara is, if somebody came to me and said, I want a dual-cab ute, and this is what I want to do with it, you'd have the Navara in the top three any day of the week. It does, although, on that wider scale, like all of them, as I was just saying, it doesn't really do anything great. Of what it does, the Navara does very well. The steering's good. Turning circle's not too bad. As we've already covered, the Ride is really good. It's got a lot of good features inside. It's got very comfortable seats. Probably the only thing that lets it down a little bit on the inside is the infotainment system, which is just a little bit dated. You miss out on things like Apple CarPlay, digital radio, that type of thing. I also found something out about the Navara, which I hadn't the last time I drove it, and that is the horn pad on the steering wheel is very sensitive.
Oh.
So I kept accidentally beeping the horn.
Oh, dear. How did that go down with the other road users?
Did you manage to get a date out of it, maybe? I don't know.
You accidentally beep somebody, and then you're sort of looking around casually like, it wasn't me.
Excellent. That's fantastic.
That is so funny. I love it. That's almost a Rachel topic. That
isn't it just? Who have you honked in the past? Lovely. You can read with interest at behindthewheel.com.au Joel's full review of the Nissan Navara. Joel, thank you very much. We'll touch base next week.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, we finally hit the Behind the Wheel garage and confronted Pete with the Peugeot 5008. Is it a minivan or is it an SUV?
I just think it's a terrific-looking vehicle, to be honest, Chris. I really like it. Now, it's parked right beside a Volkswagen Tiguan.
Yeah.
It's smaller than that.
Yeah.
And it's somehow a bit more kind of stylish and
Parisian and French and lovely. Now, is it an SUV or is it a people mover? I think it probably does both pretty well.
Well, it does. And I suppose that old adage of what is an SUV normally would have been associated with four-wheel drive. But so many of them don't have four-wheel drive now. So is it just a big high-riding wagon that makes it an SUV, which, of course, could be a people mover? I don't know. Well,
I don't know, but it doesn't look like a great lump of a thing. It's it's all very nice style, you know, curves and little bits of flourishes here and there. I think it looks terrific. And I rather gather from what you've said that once you get inside, it's even better.
Well, why don't we have a look? It is, of course, that typical Peugeot face that you see right across the range. And in fact, it looks very similar to the 3008, which is just a slightly smaller version, 5-seater as opposed to 7-seater. Wow. But all right, let's get into this thing.
Wow.
This is the Peugeot 5008.
Wow, look at this. Now, here's something. It feels this trim, this cloth trim around here on the dash.
And on the store side.
It looks like a kind of a grey upmarket denim. It's stunning, and I love the light. There's obviously some lighting involved, you know, it's a little door
LED
trims.
Lighting, and have a look behind you too in the panoramic sunroof.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of the LED trims that.
Yes, now that's nice. I'm not a big fan of panoramic sunroofs because I find them glary and I tend to get sunburnt, but that is actually pretty good looking, I have to say.
It is indeed. Yeah. Check out the instrument cluster and then the gear lever. And
is that a gear lever?
It looks
like a phone or something. You know, one of those old flip phones? It looks a bit like that, doesn't it?
It does, actually. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, absolutely. I love the switch gear it's got up here to sort of, this basically controls the infotainment system. So you've got little, how would you describe that? It was sort of a press switch that can sort of flick between your music, your phone, your sat nav, all the vehicle dynamics, all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
It's, you don't see that sort of style anywhere else, do you?
No.
It's very individual and very French again.
It is. I love it. And I have a friend who likes pressing buttons in cars.
Really?
And so, Millie, you must absolutely love this because it's got more buttons and you have to keep pressing them to see what it is that they're actually connected to, because apparently they're all sort of multi-use switches depending on what part of the AV display you're in.
You're absolutely right. All right, so we've just fired it up.
Yep.
This is the Peugeot 5008. Very quiet. Pretty cheap too for a 7-seat SUV with your, I believe, 7-year warranty now from Peugeot. $42,990.
Gee, that is very good for this.
Isn't it? Absolutely.
That is terrific.
Well, this puts it right in the territory of your base model Kia Sorentos, your Toyota Klugas, your base model Mazda CX-9s.
Yes, all of them are good cars, but I tell you what, this would have to, depending on how it drives, this would have to give them a run for their money, I reckon.
Well, you know what? It does. And it's got, I think, probably just that ounce or two more character about it.
Yes.
You know,
very much. It's not one of those I've heard them described as vanilla SUVs.
Yes, as James was saying earlier in the show. Yeah, no, not at all. There's nothing vanilla about this whatsoever.
Great.
It's got a lot of personality. And you know what? It's not a bad drive either. One thing I will point out to you is this tiny baby-sized steering wheel.
Yes, it looks like something you'd see in a Formula One car or something, because it's flattened at the top and flattened at the bottom, so it's a kind of oval-sized wheel.
Yeah, and its diameter is a whole lot smaller than anything else.
Mm.
So just a couple of things. The Peugeot 5008, this is the Allure series.
Yes.
It, of course, has 7 seats, a 6-speed automatic transmission, so it is missing a couple of cogs.
I think
most people are 8-speed these days.
I think the E-Pace that I had might have accidentally been 9-speed or something.
It could well have been.
More than you need, I think, but still.
Yeah, more than you need. You're right, yeah. Got to put premium unleaded in this thing, but look, it's got some great fuel consumption figures, and it actually is a really good car to drive. Under the bonnet, would you believe we've got a 1.6-litre turbo?
No.
1.6. That's all it is. 121 kilowatts, 240 newton metres, which, of course, doesn't sound like a lot, and it doesn't rush you to 100 kilometres an hour. That takes you a leisurely 10 and a half seconds. But, you know, are you buying this car for performance, or would you be buying it for more the sort of consumption rate, the urban consumption of 9.8 litres per 100k?
Or would you be buying it because it's a lovely, functional vehicle that's just going to suit a variety of uses, very much for families who are not exactly on a budget, who can just afford to spend a little bit, but it's not unusually expensive. No. I think it'd have a variety of. I think there'd be many people who'd love it and who'd make this their choice.
Absolutely. Need to correct myself. Not a 7-year warranty, but a 5-year unlimited kilometre warranty. Yep. That's actually pretty good for $42,990.
Yep.
It is great to drive. We're going to head off and have a bit of a crack. In the meantime, I'd encourage you to head to Behind the Wheel or maybe even your local Peugeot dealer. And there you can check out the Peugeot 5008, a worthy contender, I think, these days in the family car stakes.
Very much. Beautiful.
Motorists are taking more notice than ever about how their car ownership affects the environment. But did you know that simply keeping your car clean can also be environmentally damaging? If you want to do the right thing and keep potentially harmful chemicals out of the drains, then invest in the EcoCar car cleaning range from Altrex Auto Accessories. EcoCar are a range of effective and environmentally safe products that every Australian garage should have. And they contain environmentally friendly ingredients including natural coconut and aloe vera. You can purchase the EcoCar car cleaning range from the Altrex Auto Accessories online store at altrex.com.au.
Australian families looking for the ideal vehicle for their needs are often left frustrated. Some vehicles seem to tick all the boxes but then cost the earth. Others are well priced but don't have the space or features that families need. Stop compromising, as there is an option that won't leave you wanting more. The new Havel H9. Boasting a 180 kilowatt turbo engine, 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity, the Havel H9 just can't be beaten. Visit your local Havel dealership today or havel.com.au.
Behind the wheel.
Behind the wheel. Where motoring starts.
Motoring starts? It never stops.
No, it doesn't.
And there's more to come.
Oh,
Rachel.
Yes.
I'm still not convinced. Oh, I don't know whether it's going to be roadkill. I hope it's not going to be roadkill. I'll have to try and just be delicate about that on air.
Oh, gosh. I don't even think I can look at a text message from her about it.
No, there's no pictures. It's just weird. Oh. But look, it is our rage. And that's why we invite her back on the show.
She's highly entertaining because she comes up with great topics and always fun. Fun
she's,
and games.
She's a bit like, if not a bit better looking than another of our favourites, Simon Lye. Hi, Simon.
Simon Lye.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Hello, Simon.
I don't know how to take that.
Hey, Simon, the one-time international man of mystery, now happily settled, family man.
Grey cardigan, brown corduroys.
Oh, I don't know, but he's terrific. He's terrific. Oh, How is the member of your family who made a surprise guest appearance last time, who sounded so wonderful, how's he going?
Yeah, he's okay. I've put him on the bench for this week.
Oh,
he's taking a breather.
Oh, poor little thing. I was hoping he'd come on and join in like he did last time. It was lovely.
Oh, it's fun for you guys. It's like hectic on this end. I'm trying to talk on the phone.
I bet it is.
And wrangle a baby.
Ah, there we go. It'll make a man out of you, Sim. A Toyota Corolla, however, may not. Wouldn't be kind of the first car you'd go. I'll put it, sort of in that bracket. However, they've been around for a billion years.
Yeah.
Almost as long as Peter.
I outlast them by a long way. Gosh. But I do remember them when they first came on the market here in Australia. And
wow, you'll still see some of them floating around, too.
You do, indeed.
You still see on the road.
And
they're well built.
We'd be very well advised not to make fun of them because you'd have to say Toyota's international, global, giant success status came pretty much on the back of the Corolla.
Back of the Corolla, indeed.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, well, that's what they're known for, is reliability. Mm. So it's no wonder there are a few still floating around. And that's really what they stand for. It's really an average kind of car. There's nothing that really stands out about them. It's not something you go, that drive is fantastic, that particular feature is fantastic, but it's just, one big package that just fits nicely together and it's value for money. So I think that's why people just keep coming back.
Is that why we pretty much month in, month out, see the Toyota Corolla, if not the best-selling car in the country, the second or third? I don't remember the last time we've seen a Corolla, kind of down in the number 5 best-selling spot.
No, definitely not. I mean, it is still the best-selling passenger car. It's right up there. In fact, it's daylight after them, so there are better cars out there, and there are things in the same category which offer a lot more, better value for money, in fact. But I think their name and their reputation is so strong, and some people don't do their research, and they just know, Corolla, it's reliable, it's dependable, I'll just go get another one.
And I suppose that really, if you do end up with a Corolla, it's not like as if you've got a bad car. It couldn't be further from it.
No.
Reliable, kind of comfortable, does the job.
Mm.
Perhaps, though, if you're more of a driver, maybe you should be looking around.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. You've said it exactly. It like I said, it's nothing that's exceptional, but it does the job, like you said.
We can read with interest at behindthewheel.com.au the full written review of the Toyota Corolla by the one and only Simon Lai. In the meantime, what can we look forward to hearing about from you next week?
Well, it'll be another Toyota. It'll be the CHR.
Oh, yes. I like them, actually.
Funky as hell, aren't they?
I think they're terrific, yeah.
Oh, just like you.
Simon, you're the best.
He had to make up for the ages joke before, didn't he?
Oh, no, that's all right.
Thanks, exactly. Man. We'll chat to you next week.
See you, guys. Bye. Good.
Yep, product review time for our great mates at Altrex Auto Accessories. That's altrex.com.au. And they posed the question to us this week. Did you remember, Pete, that episode from Seinfeld where Jerry's car smelt so bad, there was nothing he could do to fix the problem?
Oh, wouldn't that be shocking?
Awful. And it was a very funny episode. If you haven't seen it, please do dig it up. We think, though, the episode that of that particular sitcom wouldn't have gone ahead had they had their hands on CarPlan odour eliminator spray.
Hey.
It wouldn't have had to give the car away at the end if he'd had a bottle of this, because we have basically tested this, and you can read the review of the CarPlan odour eliminator spray at behindthewheel.com.au. But basically, a pleasant interior smell is what we got, and that was after we had to deal with things like old milk, which is commonplace in any car that carries children under the age of four.
Any family car has that very familiar odour.
That's right. Get into Peter Hitchener's car, for example, and you get the odour of old soft-serve ice cream on the odd occasion.
Oh, they don't get a chance to stick around, don't worry.
Look, if you are looking for a fresh, pleasant smell that will eliminate odours, all you need is a bottle of this CarPlan Odour Eliminator Spray. 250ml bottle. You can buy it right now for $9.99. I'd encourage you to do it this second while you're listening to the show. Go on, Google altrex.com.au. All right, everybody, just calm down. I know this is the bit everybody gets really excited about, but really, get yourself a hot Bonox.
Yes, that's right.
And a salada with Vegemite. And
lovely idea. Somewhere nice to sit, or maybe a pot of Prince of Wales tea. We've had the royal wedding. Let's just keep the spirit going. Some cucumber sandwiches, scones, jam and cream.
And, of course, if you are her mother, strong scotch like you always have had in the past.
Hey, hey, hey.
It is the one and only, Rachel Franco.
Hello, guys. How are we?
Very well.
Oh, great.
Confused. We've been trying to figure out the text you sent us in regards to your topic, and I'm concerned that it's roadkill.
Well, almost roadkill.
Oh,
almost.
No.
Right.
I did see a lot of roadkill, but this particular incident that you're referring to was almost roadkill.
Okay.
Luckily, crisis averted, but yeah.
Right. So we're talking about today.
It.
This topic is sort of roadkill, but not.
Near misses. Stuff right. You see on the road.
Oh,
right, okay.
Narrowly averting catastrophic events.
Oh, don't get me started on this one.
Mm. No, in fact, here's your forum to get started.
Oh, actually,
so go
good
right
idea.
Ahead.
Let's
get
it. All right.
Go for it.
How do you feel about a lovely three-seater leather sofa that comes tumbling off the back of a trailer at 100 k's an hour on the Geelong-Melbourne road and does cartwheels merrily down the road, just missing all the traffic, but nobody still knows how it managed to do so? That's a good
insane.
Place to start. What do you think?
I think it's a great place to start.
Okay, so things you see on the road, sofa, that's got to be up there because you don't really expect to see a sofa on a freeway.
I know.
No, you don't.
I know.
What about between Sydney and
down the freeway?
What about between Sydney and Tamworth, Rach? Did you notice anything unusual there?
I see a lot of things between Sydney and Tamworth and back the other way.
Yeah, a lot of kind of broke country music artists hitchhiking their way back to Sydney, realising it's futile what they've been.
A lot of smashed guitars by the side of the road.
Yep.
No, today I actually just drove back from there today and ended up rescuing a beloved family pooch from the middle of the New England Highway.
Oh, good Lord.
No.
As you do?
No.
So a loose puppy dog cruising around on the highway?
Yeah, just a little terrier with his winter jacket thing on, just
darting
out onto the road.
Oh, poor little thing.
So you managed to rescue him okay, safe enough?
I did, but I must say, in all seriousness, it could have actually been...
Yep.
quite the opposite, because it was sort of coming over a crest, and I was able to pull over, and there wasn't anyone around me at that point, but after I'd sort of gotten him off the road, a few other people had stopped, and then this truck, this massive semi-trailer came coming over full pelt, and he ended up having to brake heavily and put a bit of rubber on the road, but managed to get around everything and didn't hit anyone or anything. So, but yeah, that was a nice little highlight.
Indeed. And that is the danger, these high-speed roadways.
Live animals.
And live animals and pedestrians and people parked on the side of the road. Unfortunately, we see it all too often where, you know, people who may not be concentrating for just a couple of seconds, but at 100 kilometres an hour, the distance you travel is so great that you can get yourself into such trouble so quickly. So I'm hoping you got well off the road and got well out of the way where you parked up and made sure that you were safe in kind of retrieving said puppy dog, because it's just crucial.
Dear.
I
well remember driving up a hill on a freeway, and coming merrily over the hill towards me was a shopping trolley.
Of course it was.
And it was just, of course, choosing its own path down the road, because there was nobody with it, because it had merrily flipped off the back of a trailer driven by somebody up ahead who deserved a good talking to.
Yeah.
And so there's cars all over the place avoiding this trolley, which is continuing down the hill at quite a pace, because that's what gravity will do when you're on an incline. And even though it's only got four little wheels, as you know, with shopping trolleys, they go wherever they feel like.
Sure do. Yeah. Absolutely. I still feel for the guy who back in 1987 had to deal with a bouncing Hillman Hunter bonnet that had actually come off my mum's car while we were in it on the way to school. And I'll never forget that noise of kind of cracking metal and then bang! And suddenly we're driving down the road blind because there's a bonnet blocking the windscreen. And then the hinges, you could see them kind of coming loose, and bang, off it comes. And it bounced over the roof of the car, and I turned around and there's a combi van behind us who had to take evasive action to avoid said bouncing bonnet.
What did your mum do? Did your mum...
Oh, no, she immediately started abusing my father.
Oh, I see.
As you do.
Like, really? You could have checked this. You put us in danger.
Or she could have actually had a word to the manufacturers back in the good old UK for having made a car that disassembled itself spontaneously.
I think the Hillman Hunter should have been off the road by that stage anyway.
Right.
Back in the days when Dad would get the bog out, you know, and the spray paint.
Oh.
And back in the days where, you know, safety wasn't high on the list of people's
apparently not. Apparently not. So I just want to know, was the Hillman Hunter bonnet removed by the family, or was it just left there as a sort of a permanent sculpture?
I believe Dad went and got it back, and then he went to the wreckers and got another one.
It was
metallic brown, which of course went beautifully with the rest of the red Hillman Hunter. Such a good look. Anyway.
Oh, you're so funny.
Love it.
I wish I'd been there. Now, what I also want to know about this story is, because, Rach, you've driven with Chris. I've driven with Chris. And he's not the best passenger in the world. Let's be honest about this. That foot goes to the floor and hangs onto anything and the profanities. Well, we'll leave them back in the car. What did you actually say to your mum when it happened?
Look, I can't remember because my mum's a wild Irish banshee, of course, so she just went
lovely.
Off her nut.
She's lovely.
We say that with all love and respect.
Oh, absolutely, indeed, yeah. Abusing my father, who wasn't actually in the car, but of course us kids got to listen to that.
Oh,
so,
that is
anyway.
So funny. But, trips to school, that's another, another topic, I reckon.
Trips to school,
the things that happened.
Done. Definitely. We do it this week, but we're out of time. Rach, good luck. Thank you for rescuing said puppy.
Yes, good work,
no problem.
Rach.
We love you lots. Stay safe in the meantime.
I've tucked my cape into my pants now.
Oh, good work.
Such a superhero.
Back into that phone box and change.
I do love the lace undies on the outside in particular. There's something about that.
Yeah, real classy.
On you, Rach. See you, mate. See you next week. See you, Pete.
Talk Cheers.
To you
next week.
Noticed all the light commercial vehicles on the roads today? Well, we figured this booming segment of the market needed a new focus. Ute and Van Guide provides unbiased reviews of new utes and vans available on the Australian market. We drive and use these vehicles as they were intended to ensure you get the best information and opinions based on real-world experience before you decide which new ute or van to purchase. And stay up to date with the latest commercial vehicle news too at uteandvanguide.com.au.
Havel's just released a new family seven-seater SUV, the Havel H9. A finalist in the 2017 4x4 Australia Awards, the Havel H9 is an impressive SUV, boasting a 180-kilowatt turbo engine, smooth 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity. The luxurious Havel H9 will take you to the outback and back in complete comfort. It's the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au.
You've heard us on the radio. Now check out the Behind the Wheel website. At behindthewheel.com.au, you can browse all our latest car reviews and car product reviews too. You can also watch our video car reviews and check out all the latest auto news. And make sure you leave your comments. Give us feedback, ask for advice, or just let us know all about your car. behindthewheel.com.au, where motoring starts.